Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. It is a Friday and we're packed. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, our Blazing Five. These are easily the best numbers of the week. I love this week. I don't guarantee anything, but I've already made several large purchases based on the Blazing Five. Also, next hour, Lance Briggs, former Chicago Bear. What a circus they've got going this weekend. Joy Taylor. So it was interesting. You know, I've had this skirmish, this border skirmish with Baker Mayfield for years, and yes. I like Sam Darnold. And to this point, Baker looks like, whoa, he's really flourishing, and Sam had a lousy NFL career. You watched that game last night. Sam was pretty interesting, was he not?
It was definitely interesting. He overcame some injuries, and
yes,
he looks pretty good.
On the road, short week. So let's start our show with that. So I went and I thought to myself, all right, Sam Darnold played the Houston Texans last night. And Baker played the Houston Texans last week. Now, Sam was at major disadvantages. Baker played the Texans at home. Sam played them on the road. Sam has an awful offensive line. Baker has top one or two offensive lines. That matters for quarterbacks. Sam not only was on the road, it was a short week, a Thursday night game on the road. Those are tough on road teams. Sam also lost his best player, Christian McCaffrey. I mean, his star running back, right? Early second quarter. So despite all those, I went and looked at three or four things that matter. I went and looked at first downs between the two. I went and looked at passing touchdowns, yards, completions, passing first downs and third down. And, oh, what do you know? Sam threw for more yards and more yards per completion and had 50% more passing first downs and his third down passer rating. Same defense. Sam actually had a worse offensive line. Sam actually lost his star running back. Sam was actually on the road. Sam was a short week. And Sam's numbers pretty impressive. Isn't that interesting? And by the way, this is no indictment of Baker Mayfield, but it is interesting, isn't it? When Baker the first 2 years didn't have any support, he was awful. He led the NFL or second in interceptions. He called out the medical staff. He was embarrassing. He was a mess. He got a little plump. It's one of the reasons they haven't paid him yet. They're not quite sure I can handle success. And he was terrible. Then he got a really good coach and a really good offensive line, and now Baker wins games. And Sam was really terrible last year in New York and the year before, with a bad coach and a terrible O-line and bad receivers and no running game. So what does it all mean? It means when Sam and Baker both get a good coach, both get some weapons, pretty good. They can win games. And neither is good enough to overcome crap. Andrew Luck is about the only guy that can in the last decade. That is it. And Sam's not as good as Andrew Luck. He's big like Sam. He played in the Pac-12 like Sam. He's athletic like Sam. Doesn't throw as good a ball. Is not as good pre-snap. And Baker Mayfield's not Andrew Luck either. That both of these quarterbacks, neither one's an A prospect. Neither one can overcome nonsense. But I will say this for Sam Darnold. As of this morning, we looked. Baker has the third best pass blocking line in the league. Sam has the 31st after last night. And I want to throw this out. Now, so Baker, Sam is all your preference. If you live in Cleveland or Ohio, you're a Baker guy. If you live in Carolina this morning, you're a Sam guy. I've always been more of a Sam guy. He's a bigger athlete. He's a stronger athlete. And he's more mature. So I would go Sam, but not a lot of difference here, right? But here's the one thing. I went this morning and looked at this. Because we all know what I'm about to say is obvious. It really helps Mac Jones because he's got a really good offensive line. It really hurts Trevor Lawrence because he has a bad offensive line. The reason the Browns are going to beat the Bears this week is Justin Fields has a bad offensive line. The reason Trey Lance may succeed early is the Niners have a good offensive line. Offensive lines dictate to a huge percentage. Your coach and your offensive line dictates to young quarterbacks how things are going to go. I went and looked at the 10 lowest graded pass blocking teams according to Pro Football Focus. One team has a winning record. Sam Darnold in Carolina. And the only other teams on this list that you're pretty sure are going to have winning records are the Bills, the Chargers, and the Ravens. And the reason being Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, and Justin Herbert. So for those who still fall in the Sam Darnold's no good, only team with a bad pass-blocking offensive line, with a winning record, one in the league, Sam Darnold. He's not Andrew Luck. He's not great. Sam put the ball on the carpet twice last night. But he throws a good ball. He's big. He's strong. He's athletic. He's coachable. And now that he can play with a lead, with some weapons, and a pretty good coach, it's amazing. Pretty amazing, right? We all want to bury these young guys. Let it bake. Matt Rhule, terrific young coach, much like Kevin Stefanski. Stefanski's terrific. Great. Matt Rhule and Stefanski are very similar. Very good scheming coaches. Very clever. Here's Matt Rhule after.
If you watch the way we called the game, it means we trust him. You know, even on that last drive, I mean, we're throwing, you know, four verticals with him. One thing about Sam, he has some moxie, man. I mean, he stayed in the pocket, had that long run called back, but, you know, finding Terrace on the 3rd and 12. I mean, there were some huge conversions by Sam. And again, it's him just playing within the system, but also I think he has a courageousness that, you know, he's not crossing the line going over the top. He's protecting the football and still pushing the ball down there.
Matt Rhule knows more football than you do. I know it's hard, Ohio guy. He knows more football than you. He sought Sam Darnold. Listen to him. He likes Sam Darnold. Not saying he's great, but given at least some of Baker's advantages. You saw the numbers. They played the Texans 2 weeks. I don't see the big gap like everybody else. All right, so this is interesting. Alex Guerrero was, of course, Tom Brady's trainer. And, boy, he came out. And, you know, next week, Tom and Alex and the Buccaneers go to New England and play Bill Belichick and all those guys. Big game next week. So Alex Guerrero called out Bill Belichick. Woo-wee! He says it was like Bill never really, I think his emotions or feelings never evolved with age. I think in time with Tom, as Tom got into his late 30s and early 40s, Bill was trying to treat him like a 20-year-old kid that he drafted. And I think that was such a Bill thing. He never evolved. You just can't treat someone in their 40s like somebody in their 20s. It doesn't work. I'll get to that later. But it is interesting. Albert Breer, who was on our show this week, who's lived in that area, has covered the teams, had an interesting perspective on why Guerrero is throwing out bombs a week ahead of the big game.
I think to some degree it's, the Brady camp getting ahead of this a little bit, because I think they know there are going to be a lot of stories that are going to come out next week, and they know the Patriots have a way of getting their side of the story out there. So I don't think this is like a coordinated effort. Like, I don't think Camp Brady like had a meeting and did a media blitz or anything like that. People on Brady's side of it figuring, well, if the Patriots are going to get their side of the story out there inevitably, then we might as well tell our side of the story as well.
Let me give you my belief, my theory on what could be happening. I don't know this to be true, but it's my guess. Tom Brady now has a net worth, along with his wife, of almost $700 to $800 million. When you get to be that big, LeBron's in that category, there's a handful of Americans, men and women who are, you get into protection mode. Even when you get enough to retire, your stockbroker says you don't need home runs, just hit doubles, right? Tom now doesn't need a lot of home runs. He really doesn't need any doubles. But it's protection mode for the TB12 brand, his legacy. Bill Belichick, by the way, doesn't need any more Super Bowls either. Does not need to win another playoff game or a division. But he is the greatest football coach ever, and losing season, losing season, losing season, losing season without Tom does him no good. I think what you're seeing now, and we've seen three major books in the last 18 months. I've read two They're all excellent. The Dynasty by Jeff Benedict. Read it. It's Better to Be Friends, Seth Wickersham. Going to read it. Have it. Ian O'Connor, terrific writer. Belichick, making of a great football coach. We have officially, folks, moved into the framing of the dynasty stage. Both sides now have to protect their brands and future earnings and legacies and revenue and reputations. And so, Guerrero, just knowing how New England has historically, as Albert Breer said, leaked stories to protect Bill and the organization, gets a little ahead of it, throws out a little stink bomb just to let you know. And we're aware of what you do. By the way, I saw this happen in Hollywood several years ago. There was a terrific book by James Miller called The CAA. It's the creative artist agency. Joy and I work in the world where we need representation, and at different times in our life have perhaps been represented by them. They represent many TV and radio people and athletes. And the creation of it by Michael Ovitz and Ron Meyer, and then they had a divorce, and they were both very successful, but there was a little tour, and they wrote the book, and it was fantastic, and you should read it, but it was, you're making sure both sides wanted their story told, and you're framing and earnings and reputation and legacies, and this is what happens to very successful people, companies, CEOs, brands, entrepreneurs. So I think we've got three great books out there. I've read two of them. They're fantastic. But, you know, as you read the books, you can kind of tell what side's talking, what side's feeding, what side's giving, what side's taking. And this is the game, of course. You know this. It's the game behind the game. Peter King this hour. Aaron Rodgers is now stepping back a little bit. He's reframing what he said earlier this week. Aaron is doing a lot of talking these days. That's good content.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Aaron Rodgers has been very talkative this offseason. Sometimes I think he's been a little bit of a hypocrite. He talked about silence is often wisdom, and he won't stop talking. Brian Gutekunst isn't saying anything. Nobody's saying anything. Aaron has a weekly grievance session. And I have said, Aaron, you want power. You sought power in the offseason. But there is, when you seek power and get it, there's a responsibility to understand criticism will come with it. So I think he's being a tad bit of a hypocrite. I also think he lectured people on the beautiful mystery. There's wisdom in silence. And he won't stop talking. So yesterday, he walked back some of his criticism earlier this week. Nate Burleson, Bill Cowher, Jermichael Finley. I defended all of them. I didn't think any of their opinions were unjust or inflammatory. I thought they were just opinions. I don't have to agree with opinions. There is a gap between inflammatory and an opinion, even if I disagree with it. And so Aaron walked back a little of his criticism to maybe one of the people. Maybe it's Finley. I don't know. But here is Aaron yesterday.
I do want to maybe rephrase or refocus what I said. I strongly believe in everybody's ability to have an opinion, and I respect the fact that they have an opinion and should have an opinion. My issue is a platform given to individuals who only desire to say inflammatory things that are not based in fact.
Okay, do you think you can control that platform? Because what I hear is a guy that is seeking control all offseason and now seeking control of your opinions and your platforms. That's a miserable way to live. Aaron, you cannot control anybody's opinion nor any of these companies' platforms. In fact, I would argue, Aaron, you cannot control the outcome of Packer games. There's too many variables. Your team doesn't have a pass rush. Your team didn't play good defense. Your coach in the playoff made a decision I still find egregiously weird. So Aaron's moved into this space where he's seeking control of things, and that is impossible as a public figure. Even the mob in America is like, don't mess with the media. Because like any industry, there's some people who are going to be irresponsible, just like some Packer players you draft that are not any good. There's a lot of variables in life. And Aaron here, I think he's too smart to confuse the two, so I just want to separate these. Aaron's confusing criticism, opinion, for inflammatory. if I criticize one of Aaron's buddies in Hollywood's movie, that's an opinion. It's not inflammatory. I'll show you what's inflammatory. Stepping to the podium for 20 minutes and ripping your front office, naming 10 players that they should have re-signed, that you would have re-signed, and criticizing your bosses publicly. If I did that about Fox and my boss, Eric Shanks, you know, he should have re-signed her. He should have fired him. Should re-sign this producer. That would be inflammatory. And that's exactly what Aaron did. Now, Aaron also, a couple weeks ago, after losing, came out and said, hey, it's one game out of 17. We'll play better. That wasn't inflammatory. That's an opinion. But don't confuse inflammatory with opinion. You are a reigning MVP. I mean, I look at it like the media. I choose who I don't try to control the media. But if I find people irresponsible or inflammatory, I'm not interested. I see a lot of that on Twitter. I have probably 4 to 5 people in politics that I follow, I lean on in crisis. One's a writer for The Atlantic. One is a writer for The Wall Street Journal. One is a writer for The New York Times. I have one or two of them are television people, and that's who I follow. But what I don't try to do is control them. I pick who I respect and like, and then I follow them. And my harshest criticism of Aaron, because I don't think any of this is directed at me, but I did say when a week before the season, he came out and said, I'm 50-50 on retirement. I said, that's bad judgment. Don't do that. Don't tell anybody. Your young teammates may take it wrong. Your coaching staff may take it wrong. You may have scouts in the organization that are like, we don't think Jordan Love can play. I'm not going to stick around here in Green Bay if Aaron's gone in a year. Get me out of here. I don't think you should ever publicly say, yeah, think about retirement. I didn't like that. But again, let me clarify it. That's an opinion that is not inflammatory. How do I know? Because about half the people in the media that I follow agreed with it. It wasn't a good thing to say. By the way, a great, just because the meat's there, you don't always have to bite into it. Alex Guerrero ripped Bill Belichick, ripped him yesterday. And what did Brady do? He didn't take the bait. Remember, here's what he said about Belichick in his New England years.
Everyone has, you know, protective feelings and emotions as friends and family members. And that's just part of being in sports. And you have a lot of people who, you know, because they're not out there, they want to protect, and it's a very caring, loving thing that a lot of people do. But, you know, from my standpoint, I had a great time, but really my focus has been on trying to be the best I could be for this team and trying to go out and be a winning quarterback, be a championship level quarterback for this team and this organization, because they certainly deserve it. And, you know, I made a commitment to them and I want to live up to it.
Why did I run that bite? Because that was an inflammatory situation. Alex Guerrero on Belichick, that's inflammatory. It's an opinion, but it's inflammatory. And how did Brady handle it? I'm gratefully backed off. He didn't want it to be inflammatory. So Brady clearly can tell the difference between that's inflammatory, I'm going to have a grateful opinion. And I think Aaron knows all this stuff. But when you're in the space where you're trying to control platforms and people and opinions, it's a miserable way to live. I sit and watch Twitter, and like conservatives are trying to make liberals more conservative, and liberals are trying to make conservative more liberal. And it's like, just find the people you like, consume their content, and stop trying to change and alter people's opinion so it's yours. Control is a miserable life. Nobody really has any control over any of this stuff. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
It's a bar, Colin.
What's that?
Control is a miserable life. You can't control anything. You can control yourself. That's it.
And by the way, sometimes at night, I can't even do that. I'll eat popcorn, a Pop-Tart,
grilled. I was on the hunt for some popcorn
last night. I can't control
night.
Myself at night around food.
Yeah.
Lexi, my stepdaughter, makes cookies and muffins. If they're in the house, I eat them all day long. I can't control me. I'm not going to try to control platforms and opinion and
no,
my
but that's
bosses.
What everyone tries to do. Everyone tries to control everyone else.
Just get out of that
control
space.
Everything in the universe.
Enjoy your life.
I want to know everything the government's doing. Just have a mimosa. Relax. So Justin Fields will be starting for the Bears this Sunday against the Browns, but head coach Matt Nagy wants everyone to slow down on dismissing Andy Dalton. So when that time comes, there's a lot of stuff that can happen between now and then. I don't really want to go out there other than just saying when Andy is healthy, he is our starter.
Okay, of course, what happens when Justin Fields goes out this weekend, goes 21 of 30, has a touchdown, maybe a turnover, he's kind of dynamic, and you upset the Browns. I do not think it'll happen, by the way.
No.
But Chicago's getting a couple of interior defenders back. They're getting healthier. It'll be a closer game than you think. What if he upsets them? What do you do then?
I don't even know that they need to upset the
Browns.
That's
a good point. What if they play well?
What if they play well? The Browns are supposed to win. They're favored by 7. The Browns are supposed to win, according to Fox Bet. They're supposed to win this game. So even if it's competitive, even if Justin Fields looks good and has one, you know, interception or one,
I'll give a quarterback a turnover every game. You get one.
What I don't understand is what is the point? What is the point? The reason Justin Fields is not starting right now is because he's quote unquote not ready, right? That was the reason why he's not the actual starter. We know he's starting this game, but that's why he wasn't named the starter at the beginning of the season, right? Because he's not ready.
Right.
So what if he looks ready?
I know.
He's the future of the organization. I don't understand.
Yeah, I get it.
We know what Andy Dalton is. He's not a mystery. He is not a beautiful mystery. We know exactly what he is. Here's the pamphlets. That is what you're going to get from Andy Dalton. And it's no disrespect to Andy Dalton, but this is starting to become weird.
A little weird.
Justin Fields is the future of the organization.
Yeah.
It's not like you, like, what are you trying to prove?
I know.
It's very strange. If Justin Fields goes out there and looks terrible, makes
you stinkeroony.
It's just like, all right, when Andy's back, maybe Justin needs a little bit more time. Fine. I don't anticipate that.
No.
Even if he does look bad, Zach Wilson just threw 4 interceptions. Who cares? He's a rookie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just find this situation in Chicago to be just so bizarre. That's just such an unnecessary statement. So Christian McCaffrey suffered a strained hamstring last night against the Texans and was unable to finish the game. Matt Rhule said after the game that McCaffrey will undergo additional testing. He doesn't know the severity of it yet. And he did say that if McCaffrey misses time, it'll actually affect the passing game more than their running game.
Yeah, it's interesting. He really is. When I say this, he runs the best routes I've ever seen a running back run in my life. I mean, there's been some really good pass-catching running backs. He is a huge weapon for Sam Darnold. He's
yes.
a total mismatch. Linebackers cannot cover him in the passing game.
No, their offense isn't the same without him. He signed a 4-year, $64 million contract extension last year, but obviously played in 3 games because of the ankle and shoulder injuries. They also lost J.C. Horn, yeah. who had a broken
now,
foot.
They have Chuba Hubbard and Royce Freeman, so
yes.
they're not bereft of talent. So I will say this, both those guys are good B-backs. They're not the same, but I think it's a very clever play-calling operation with the receiving core is really good. Tommy Trouble, the rookie Notre Dame tight end, looks to be a very good little player. So they're not without weapons. They can win a game without McCaffrey. It means everybody's got to play more perfect, but they can win without McCaffrey.
They can, but he just brings such a dynamic element to their offense.
Even as a decoy.
Yeah, it's you don't feel as good about the Panthers if he is going to be out for a significant amount of time. Hopefully it's something that's just a few weeks, and you know, obviously hamstrings are very tricky, yeah. but I'm sure get an update on that today. So Alabama head coach Nick Saban didn't appear to be in the best of moods when he was speaking to the media the other day. He was asked a question about his tight end's increased role, and he was very annoyed.
Well, he's doing what he's supposed to do. He practices better. He's more engaged. He's more focused on what he's supposed to do. And he's having more positive performance on the field, which is what any player is supposed to do. I think that did any of you play sports? I mean, the coach is supposed to play the best players, right? I don't know. Maybe if you didn't play, maybe that's not something that you quite get.
You know,
so to answer your question, he's doing what he's supposed to do.
Now, I have said this before. I feel it's a responsibility as a sportscaster. Now, this is just me, that I like to feel the pain of being an athlete. So I run, I lift, I'm always sore. Not that it validates or invalidates somebody if they don't.
Right.
But I do think that sometimes I do read media and I think, have you ever run a business? Like, you can't just pay everybody max money. Whenever the media is yeah. like, just pay the player, I'm like, that's not how a business works. There's a salary cap. And the second thing is, Coaches have a right to occasionally bark. Sports are very intense. The stadiums are loud. If a coach barks, it's not the end of the world. I'd prefer my guy don't bark all the time.
Yeah.
But there are moments where I've thought if I was a coach, I would occasionally ask that very question. Do you understand how sports works? It's hard. It's loud. It's volume. It's intense.
I mean, I don't like those questions because it's like, okay, Nick, so if you do a show, like, do you have any broadcasting experience? What are you doing up here? Okay. Do you know how a microphone works? So, look, he's obviously being snarky and he's annoyed. He might be annoyed because they just barely beat Florida last weekend. Now,
I want to interview Nick Saban so badly right now.
But the thing about Belichick and Nick Saban, because this is not uncharacteristic of either one of them, because they do the same thing. And then when they get together, they're like, it's like fireworks.
Yeah.
But they're supposed to be like the best hangs. And the players love, well, at least Saban, love Saban. And like, Belichick's this, like, super fun Scotch guy. Like, who they are away from the podium is I believe, a completely different person.
Well, I think Saban would be a blast to hang with. I think Nick's a riot. I think Nick's actually got a ton of personality, and you see it in recruiting. I think.
Nick absolutely does.
Yeah, Nick Saban.
Nick reserves that snarkiness for the media,
right.
Specifically, and apparently his assistant coaches, because that's the story with that.
I don't know if Nick drinks. I would. Before I die, if I could get an hour alone drinking and just laughing and telling stories, Belichick, I would just be concerned he would yell at me. Would Nick, I know he would tell.
No, but see, I don't think Belichick. I think Belichick is like, let's loose.
I don't know.
I think like he's a guy who's very serious, like Nick. And then when he shuts it down, he shuts it all the way down.
Oh no!
Well,
I'm glad you feel that.
They're currently favored. Well, I think it depends on what you ask him. They're currently favored by 45 over Southern Miss, according to Fox Bet this weekend. So it'll be a nice bounce back game after that Florida.
I'd pay for Nick to fly out.
Florida game.
Seriously.
You're welcome anytime, Nick. Just
Nick, Southwest
Airlines.
Don't
tell us how to do our jobs.
Book the flight.
Even though we tell you how to do yours all the time.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
NBCSports.com. Peter King, Hall of Famer since 1992, member of the Board of Selectors, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So I got to ask Peter about this. Listen, I said this about Baker and Sam Darnold. Neither can overcome nonsense. Andrew Luck did, because I thought Andrew Luck was a once-in-a-decade performer, and then it knocked him out of the league. But I do think Sam Darnold now has a really smart coach, has some really nice weapons. I don't love their O-line. But I do think Sam's good enough to get you to the playoffs. I'm not sure with this O-line again. But I do think it whether it invalidates Adam Gase or not, I think it's a true test of Sam Darnold. And I think he's a talented kid. That's my takeaway, that you could get to the playoffs with him. What's your interpretation of what you watch?
Well, it helps when the defense is holding teams to 10 points and 191 yards a game, as Carolina's defense has done in the first 3 weeks. Sam Darnold has had to be a complimentary player.
Yeah.
In the Jets, he needed to be a franchise quarterback on a horse crap team.
Yeah.
That's pretty hard to do. Colin, it's one of the reasons why whenever I'm talking to agents or people before a draft, I always say, when you're a quarterback, be careful what you wish for about getting picked high in the draft, okay? Patrick Mahomes and his agents got the dream scenario. They got the Kansas City Chiefs to trade up to number 10, and they picked Mahomes at number 10 with a great offense, a great offensive head coach, and a good talent base, to basically, you know, have a good chance to win every year. Now, honestly, I don't care if you're some combination of Tom Brady, Joe Montana, Terry Bradshaw, and Bart Starr. When you go to the New York Jets, it's why I feel for, honestly, I feel for Zach Wilson. Because you tell me, what chance does Zach Wilson have in the next 2 or 3 years to win with the Jets? I mean, maybe we'll all be shocked. I don't think so.
So, Joy and I was a defender of Matt Nagy. I know Matt and I like him, and I defended him with the initial Andy Dalton starts. I do think he kind of corners himself, traps himself here with Andy's our starter regardless, because I do think Chicago gets a little healthier on the defensive side this week, And I think I do think the Browns are kind of trying to figure out the seven new starters on defense. They're not quite there yet, and they may not be there this weekend. It could be a very, very competitive football game. I think it will, and I think Justin could have some success. What do you make of Nagy's sort of pivot here with this, like, period, Andy's healthy, he starts. What do you do if Fields looks good this weekend?
Obviously, he's going to change his mind. I mean, if he plays great this weekend and they go to Cleveland and win the game, he's probably going to have to change his mind. You know what has really surprised me about this, Colin? All of this story. How really smart football people in our business are continuing to beat Matt Nagy over the head because he's trying to handle Justin Fields in 2021 the way he handled Patrick Mahomes in 2017. Who killed Andy Reid in 2017 for keeping Patrick Mahomes on the bench? Answer, nobody. Now, you can say, well, he had Alex Smith. Now, tell me, how much better is Alex Smith than Andy Dalton?
Not much.
What, 3% better?
Right.
Hey, not much. So the point is, Matt Nagy, and I go back to something he told me in training camp. This is about everything I do is going to be about making Justin Fields a great quarterback for the next 15 years, not some failed experiment for the next 2 years. And so I don't understand why everyone is standing on the table saying you have to play him right now. No, you don't. You don't have to play Justin Fields right now. If you believe deep down he's not ready and you have a good alternative, play the alternative. Tune out the noise.
Yeah. He also sees stuff at practice I don't see. I do think it's interesting. I'd said this, and I've tried to be fair with this, but, you know, sometimes I miss the mark. I said Aaron talked about the wisdom of silence in the offseason. And he has a weekly grievance session. He's doing a lot of talking. Brian Gutekunst has just gone into hiding. He's not talking at all. So it's like, Aaron, you told us silence is wisdom. You haven't stopped talking for 2 months. And yesterday he kind of backtracked. And it is, you know, he's kind of going through a little bit of a metamorphosis here. And his offseason was very zen. There's nothing wrong with that at all. I got no problem with it. I didn't love him saying 50-50 on retirement. I said that. I thought it was a mistake. I don't think you put that out there. You got a young locker room. You got scouts and coaches. But what do you make of Aaron has been I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback in this league this verbal. Combative's the wrong word, but, you know, really, really sensitive. What do you kind of make of Aaron's last several months?
Well, look, most of 15 years since being drafted, for most of that, he has been a passive-aggressive guy. And, you know, if he disagrees with something, he may roll his eyes and make a side comment or something, but he's never going to say, I have been mistreated. That's not how he rolled. And now this year, he came into camp, and he basically had the public airing of grievances. You know, it was Festivus night at the Costanza house. But right now, when you look at Aaron Rodgers, I think he is going to the edge of the cliff. He's going to the edge, and he's saying some things, but he's not saying everything he can say. And I think, Colin, he's at the point in his life where, you know, maybe there are some people who really care what the media say, and some people who don't care at all what the media say. I think he straddles that line because I think he does read things. I think he does hear things. He does listen. But at the end of the day, if he beats the 49ers, nobody gives a crap.
Yeah. By the way, let me just ask you, do you think they beat the Niners who are beat up themselves in the running back unit?
No.
Neither do I.
I don't think so. Because, look, in the last two times, let's forget the game last year when the 49ers were a triple-A team and the Packers went there totally healthy and killed them. But the last time that there was a game similar to this one right now, Green Bay at San Francisco, they played twice at Levi's Stadium in 2019, once in the regular season in November and once in the playoffs in January. 49ers both times scored 37 points. With Jimmy Garoppolo playing quarterback. And most of the same characters other than a beat-up running game on this team. So now I look at this and say, okay, is there going to be anything different this time? And, you know, to me, the best defensive player on the 49ers is Jair Alexander, the corner, or on the Packers, rather, is Jair Alexander. But the second best one is Za'Darius Smith. He's missing. So, I mean, I figure going into this game, Aaron Rodgers has to score in the 30s on this Green Bay, on this San Francisco team to have a chance to win this game. What did he score in 2019? A total of 28 points in eight quarters. So this is a tall task. He's got to win the game, but it's not going to be easy.
Great stuff. Peter King, NBCSports.com. Week 3 in the NFL, Panthers 3-0, which is fun. It's a good story, and I love Matt Rhule. Peter, great seeing you.
All right, Colin, thank you.
By the way, a lot of these college coaches don't work in the NFL. A lot of these coordinators don't work in the NFL. You should be rooting for Carolina because it looks like we have another great coach. It's like why you should be looking at Cleveland with Kevin Stefanski. We have another really good young coach. So now we got Flores we like, and Matt Rhule we like, and Stefanski we like, and Sean McDermott we like. Sean McVay we know is a hit. This league is going to be as strong as its quarterback play and its young coaches. We know the old guys can coach. We know Belichick, Tomlin, Carroll, Reed, Peyton. But we got who are the next seven kind of bell cow, seven bellwether coaches in this league. And Matt Rhule looks like he is really, really sharp. Because that they're still in a rebuilding process. That is a terrible offensive line. Not even mediocre. Not even bad. It's like as bad as any in the league. And they're winning games. It's something. Blazing 5, top of next hour of The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, 3-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler, TJ Hushmanzada, and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Hushmanzada, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Blazing 5, top of the hour. It is easily the best numbers of the week. In fact, I've already bet 4 of these games. I bet 4 of them on Monday and Tuesday. Got better numbers than today, but I still like, don't love them as much, but still like all my bets. This will be our winning week. Sometimes you get good numbers. It's like sometimes you go to the store, the produce is perfect. There's tomato season, yeah. Grapefruit season. Sometimes you go to the store, you still need tomatoes, but it's not tomato season. This is betting week. This is betting season.
All the avocados are ripe.
Okay, so Christian McCaffrey, Joy's got news on this. This has just been released. They face the Cowboys in 10 days.
He will miss a few weeks.
All right, so
they're still running tests on the hamstring. He's not on IR as of yet. But Chuba Hubbard is the next man up, as he's going to miss a few.
And Royce Freeman. So they're not incapable. Their bigger issue is it's a bad offensive line. Now, Dallas does not have a great defense, so you're not facing, like, you know, the Steelers. You're not facing the 49ers. So it's a winnable game at Dallas without Christian McCaffrey. But Sam Darnold probably does not play with a lead like he did the first 3 weeks. It's amazing how Greg Cosell talked about this yesterday. He may have talked about it with Baker Mayfield or somebody. He said it's all different playing with a running game and a lead. Yeah. Anybody can play with a lead. Everybody. Case Keenum won 11 games playing with a lead. Anybody can play with a lead. So Sam Darnold's playing with a lead. The question will come, you know, I've said, when Baker played trailing or had to throw against Kansas City, 2 drives, 3 and out, and a pick. It's different.
That's the difference between good and great.
That's it. And so we don't know. I don't think Darnold and Baker are great. I think they're good. And I think watch Sam trail against Dallas. It's all different. You don't have the running game. You trail in the game. They know you have to throw. Changes everything. So I would take Dallas in that game. So this is interesting. I have said the Steelers have just been coddling Ben forever, and I read something this morning, and they're still doing it. So Matt Canada is their new offensive coordinator. He's their 3rd in 4 years. He was quoted about the pathetic offense, and he said, you know, I think I need to be better. We had some matchups. We had some things going right here. I told the offense, we didn't win. We've got to do better. You know, okay, 3rd offensive coordinator in 4 years. It's not working. Maybe it's not the coordinators. Maybe it's the aging quarterback that didn't take care of himself for 15 years. that didn't commit in the off season. He admits it. That didn't, by the way, really commit to a sophisticated audible system. They still don't have it. I've got that source from multiple people. That has never really committed to sacrifice and leadership and taking care of some of his stars. He hasn't. So Ben has been coddled for 15 years. He's still doing it. By the way, 4 years, three coordinators. I went and looked at the data over the last 4 years. You know who's last in the NFL in yards per rush? Pittsburgh. Who's last in total yards rushing last 4 years? Pittsburgh. What's that mean? Translation. More dependent on an old quarterback that's partially committed. So this is why the Steelers right now are a slightly better than average team over the last 4 years. Their coach is a Hall of Famer. Their defense is excellent. But you can't win in 2021 with that. They're just not a great team. They're a good team, thanks to Tomlin and the architecture that has built a very, very sound defense. But you're not a Super Bowl team if you can't score. This team, again, new coordinator, taking the heat. They can't run. All right. By the way, Brady had some teams that couldn't throw the ball vertically, you know, but his commitment to the system and audibling and people that are partially committed, you may not see it for years in their prime. You eventually see it. Escape QuickBooks Quicksand with NetSuite by Oracle, number one financial system. Switch today. Go to netsuite.com/herd, H-E-R-D right now. Get control over your e-commerce and your financials and your HR. Blazing 5 next.